So was it fun listening to those names? I preached about these names twice in the past 12 years. So this is the third time. Meaning, yes, don't get to preach much about it. That's very hard. 41 names plus a few more. So probably it's actually 44 or 5 names. So why? You know that there are four Gospels in the New Testament? Supposedly four writers writing specific story about this person named Jesus Christ, yet in four different ways. There's Matthew, there's Mark, there's Luke, and there's John. This is a list that he claims that Jesus the Messiah, Jesus Christ, is indeed directly from Abraham. So Matthew sees the beginning of his people with Abraham. There's another list, which is in Luke. And do you know how many names are in there? It's a little longer, 77. Yes, so you're glad that I didn't choose that one. That one traces all the way back to God. See the point? Jesus Christ now in Luke is all the way to God. And it's 77 names. Interesting, isn't it? And in here, in this list, Matthew, he starts with an account of genealogy of Jesus the Messiah. So the focus here is the Messiah. So now you have four different groups at this time witnessing this great event. There are the groups called the Jews. There are the people who are actually living in probably other countries, like the Romans. Luke wrote to them. Mark was not interested in any fancy stories. He liked the facts. Mark wrote facts. Meaning, he did not write anything before the baptism of Jesus Christ. John goes even more in John's opposite of Mark. He doesn't care about facts. He only cares about what it really means. It starts with, in the beginning was the Word. The Word was God. Four Gospels. And today, I'm picking up this one from Matthew. This is about Messiah. They're waiting. Messiah who's supposed to save them, rescue them. Well, them here means the Jews, in a way. But if you read this list, there are four very significant females who are not from the people of Israel. It begins with probably Tamar. She was, in a way, daughter-in-law of Judah. The story is quite weird in the beginning, even from the beginning. Judah had a Canaanite woman as his wife, but son married to this lady, first and second died without having a child. He had third son, he didn't want to give it to her. So she disguised herself as a prostitute and slept with father-in-law and gave birth. That's the line. Second goes is the famous lady Rahab. You know, when Joshua was entering this land, they were scouting out this castle, and there was a lady who was hiding the spies, Rahab. She was obviously Canaanite. And there is another famous person, Ruth. Ruth was Moabite. And there's another lady, Bathsheba, mother of Solomon, who was Hittite. So much emphasis about Messiah for the Jews, yet at the same time, he specifically names those names of ladies not the famous Israelite ladies like Sarah, Rebecca. Somehow he didn't write them. Why? There's something more about Messiah than just for the Jews. The love of God is for more, for whole humanity. Message, in a way, hidden in this genealogy with a lot of names is inclusion. It's openness. It's invitation to whole humanity. The Messiah is not just for one group of people. But that's my first talk. Probably it is our nature that can you be confident about something that you do not know or you have not done yet? I just experienced it last Thursday by cooking the turkey for the first time. Yeah, seriously, I did not even cook a chicken before. So I didn't really use the oven much. I kind of mastered the steaks and hamburger grilling outdoor, but never done it before. So we had this huge bird, and I printed out a couple of recipes from the website. One of them was Mommy's website. So I'm a dad, but following the mother's website, the recipe. And, well, what did I do? I tried to follow it to exact point. Like when it says 30 minutes, then 30 minutes it is. Well, we don't really know before we have done something or before we see this thing or experience it. Either it's real or not. It's possible or not. So when this season comes, a huge question to probably all of you or to everybody on earth is probably that, who is, by the way, God? What's God? We believe in Jesus Christ. So what's Jesus Christ? Well, we know the stories about him in this book, but events happened probably about 2,000 years ago. Written by people probably 1900 years ago. Have you seen it? Now, even we go back from the beginning of the books in this big book, it's a family of Abraham, and he's called by God. Supposedly that's about 4,000 years ago. And there has been practice. Did you know that until probably almost 1900, most Christians believed that, or still believe, a lot of us, believe that the creation time is about probably 7,500 years ago or 6,000 years ago. Either you follow the numbers in the Greek version of the Bible or Hebrew version of the Bible. Greek version gives you a little more, Hebrew version gives you a little less. So which one would you like to choose to believe? The world was created 7,500 years ago, give or take a few years, or 6,000 years ago? Talking about the literal application of the numbers we find in this book. So we have event happened, we have book written about it, then we have you, me. How do we believe it? That is the big question. With that, why do we believe it? And in a very practical way, what is it actually that we're believing about it? What is it then? As far as all my studies is concerned, that everything that is written in human language can be debated. It doesn't matter who wrote it, how sure you are, it can be debated. If it's 50 years ago, yes. 1,000 years ago, of course. 4,000 years ago, who knows? So, yeah, there's something that touches your heart. Something that is universal about it. Something that is fundamental about it. So, what we're believing with Jesus Christ is not probably about what happened 2,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago. Probably it's what is happening to us right now. So connection of this story that happened long ago to now is real. And somehow it is experiential to you. And there's one word that touches all of our hearts. It's called love. Great thing about this message, the message of Christ, or any other religion that I have studied, they see essence of whole universe somehow, love or loving. In a Buddhistic tradition, they teach that all that you experience is illusion. It's creation of your mind. This world is illusion. Whatever you see, touch, experience, all illusion. Yet, they emphasize on compassion. Why? If everything you do is illusion, the very fact that you may be compassionate, that can be illusion too. Yet somehow, there is difference in what's happening in your mind and what's happening outside your mind. So emphasis is not so much about what's happening outside of your mind. It's about what's happening inside of your mind. When we're talking about something spiritual, what are we talking about? If you read a book, is that being spiritual? If you do meditation a few hours a day, is that being spiritual? I hear so many times we talk about, I'm spiritual, I am spiritual. My advice to you all, be careful when you're saying that. Or be mindful when you're saying that. Because what you're saying is that you acknowledge your essence as spirit, who has physical body. Therefore, you acknowledge that your essential nature, your true self, is a spirit, which has a different constitution than your body. What feeds your spirit is different than what feeds your body. So experience, by reading this story that we get, is not so much about what happened, what didn't happen, is it really true, is it not true. That's not really important. What is probably important is, what is it that your mind, your heart, is really getting? More importantly, what is it that feeds your heart or your spirit? This is a wonderful season. We're so thankful. We talk so much about love. We're just getting into it. Next Sunday begins the Advent season. Then whole months we'll be talking about it. Yet, if all you do is you see it out there, not in you, what happens? Love that is in your heart, felt, experienced by your heart, that's something that can generate love that goes out. It is not so much about what happened outside. Again, important thing is what happens inside. We all know our body has had a limited time. But we believe that we have something essentially immortal within us that lives forever. That which is image and likeness of God. That which is receiving vessel of God's love and truth. That's what makes us human. That's what enables us to be loving. It's so hard to be loving. We say so easily, but we know in a way, truly loving others, it's very hard because you have to put yourself down. As Jesus is keep constantly emphasizing, this love is what? At least love your neighbor as yourself. I shared with you a couple of times, it's very hard. Even sometimes you love your children. I have two kids. But when they challenge you to the bottom of your all energy and patience, what happens? Well, you get loose. That's human, us. But we pray, we connect, and we experience that sometimes, not a lot of times, sometimes you get to experience that something amazing helped you. The power that is greater than you helped you to experience loving. That love that you are not able to give if you're alone by yourself. That is your experience of God. Jesus Christ, who may be born 2,000 years ago, may have died, resurrected, gone into heaven 2,000 years ago, may not be that much important as compared to God, love of God that you have to experience right now. And use that to make yourself happy, actually. Pursuing happiness is not a bad thing. But if you are pursuing true happiness, we all know that being selfish is not a good thing. Self-centeredness does not really take us to happiness. So we are truly pursuing true happiness. We cannot help but to be loving beings. So I put this story about Abraham. When God was calling Abraham, he gave him amazing promise. He said, I will bless you and make your name great, but then you will be a blessing. You will be a blessing. My great teacher, George F. Dole, who was a linguist, he was emphasizing in actual Hebrew, this should be more likely. You shall be a blessing. It's not in the way of saying, I will bless you or make you a blessing. No, it's kind of a command to you. You have to be a blessing. It's something that you have to become a blessing. Each one of us shall be a blessing of God, shall be the vessel of God, shall be, in our modern term, the transmitter of God's love on earth. You create this love around you if you are having love in your heart. So what you think is important. What you intend is more important. And what you do have to follow that. And in that, I believe, is the promise of God. You shall be a blessing. So may God bless you all in this great season we're entering in. And I hope and pray for you that you do something amazing this year. That you can be proud of yourself. Amen.